Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Sounds like a little holiday jazz coming back in to our hour number three here at 670 The Score, kicking off the new year for you. I am Hub Arkish. My co-host is Arthur Arkish. And there was a long time when I knew exactly what Arthur was up to on New Year's Eve, but that was a number of years ago. We're not in the same households anymore. Arthur, I'm curious. I'm sure it had something to do with fish or Trey, but what was the New Year's concert for you last night?
Let me just say real quick that it's kind of funny. I don't know if listeners even care, but Hub and I had not talked prior to going on the air this morning. So I got such a kick out of like hearing in Hub's voice a bit of trepidation or wondering just what level of goofiness I got to last night. He said it right out of the gate, but I didn't even know if he knew for sure if I was going to be on at 9 a.m. So I was on. I was minimally goofy. And yes, I was most certainly streaming Fish's archival video show. I'm trying to find the right words. We call it Couch Tour. They played their first ever Madison Square Garden New Year's Eve show from 1995. They had a live interactive chess match going on between the fans and the band, all four members on Zoom. It was extremely cool as far as music goes in this lost 2020 during the pandemic. No one continued to be more innovative and do more for their fans, in my opinion, than Fish with their whole dinner and a movie series and all the just the creative ways that they came up with to stay engaged with their fans and to try and fill the void that everyone felt last year during the pandemic. So that's what I was doing. No surprises. What about you, Hub? Was there some single malt scotch involved?
There most definitely was. And actually, Arthur, I don't know if you recall, but the very special mix CD that you made for your mother and I a number of years ago for our 35th wedding anniversary, all of Hub and Candace's greatest hits, and a bottle of Glenlivet and a bottle of Tito's vodka were New Year's Eve. That and it felt like we went through half a cord of firewood. We really broke in the fireplace in the new crib last night. And you know, it was nice. It was we knew we had to work this morning. Didn't know that the new bagel store out here in our new community would be knocking on the door at 9:05 as we were trying to get into the show to deliver our fresh bagels and tomatoes and cream cheese. So that made things interesting. But yeah, so far the New Year's off to a very good start.
That sounds awesome. Two quick things. One, I'm wondering what segment of the listeners were thinking to themselves or saying aloud, what the hell is this mix CD? Because I know the younger crew probably has no idea. And I just wanted to add, too, that our wonderful breakfast spread was an apple pancake from Walker Brothers. And we have you and Mom to thank for that. It's normally a Christmas morning tradition. We switched it up a little bit this year. It's been in the freezer. And whipped that out this morning, and I know the boys enjoyed it. I've enjoyed smelling it and tasting a little bit too. So thanks again for that. Can't right, recommend now, enough for the listeners.
Yeah, you know, Arthur, I realize I may be older than dirt, but certainly you and yours know what a mixtape is, don't you?
I do, but younger kids, tapes and CDs? I mean, no, I don't think so.
I was just going for the mix. You were going for the CD part. Now I got you. Okay, yeah.
I remember it. I remember making that one. I'm sure there was a lot of Jackson Browne on it. Actually, since I just brought it up, I was watching another there were very few bands that played live on New Year's. Obviously, there were a select few that were able to play in venues and stream live to their fans over the internet. Another band that I like a little bit, don't love them, but they're fine, Spafford, played two nights. I was watching a little bit two nights ago, and they opened their New Year's Eve run with Jackson Brown, Doctor My Eyes. Thought you'd get a kick out of that.
Yeah, guys, it's amazing that Arthur turned out as well as he did, because growing up in a house where you heard Jackson Brown 24/7, 365 for his first 15 years was probably tough. But that was always his mother's and I's favorite. We weren't a one-trick pony. We have somewhat eclectic musical taste. But yeah, Jackson Brown is kind of the guy that wove it all together for us over the years. Let us get to the phone lines, Arthur. 312-644-6767. Walt is actually out in my old haunts. Lived in Deerfield for 36 years until about 4 or 5 months ago, and that's where Walt is calling from. Walt, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How about I just wanted to tell you and your son to just keep hugging on to each other and keep valuing and not take each other for granted. I did lose my oldest son about 6 months ago and to throat cancer. So it comes as a shock, and you never can be prepared for that. It's just something that just don't take each other for granted. That's all.
Walt, my sympathies and our thoughts and prayers with you and yours. Obviously, just horrific news, and can't imagine the pain. And all we can say is that, 2020 has been so awful for so many, and we just hope that 2021 brings better things to you and yours.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to quickly embroider on a few topics that you touched on. One is, you had mentioned the fact about the quarterbacking, how you can have a lesser quality quarterback win a Super Bowl. I certainly agree with you. It's happened. But and to kind of reinforce that, if you take a look at Rodgers, the Packer quarterback, as great as he is, he's only won one. So that certainly supports the fact that you need the rest of the cast. That's very important if you're going to win anything. And if the rest of the cast is good enough, whether it's Rodgers or not, you can win a Super Bowl. So I just wanted to make that observation. It's hard to win. The other thing is on Alabama and Notre Dame. If Alabama's third or second team was going to face anybody in America, they probably should be a 40-point favorite. But luckily, it's just the first teams that play each other. Certainly, Notre Dame has a chance. The last thing I wanted to mention quickly is, if you look at Pace, Nagy, and Trubisky, all three have the same problem. The common denominator to all three problems each of those people have is an experience. And in that particular case, the Bears just didn't seem to want to pay for an experienced coach. They didn't pay for an experienced general manager. And then Pace, the inexperienced general manager, draft an inexperienced quarterback. And it just, I just think that's something I think needs to be changed, and that's it.
Well, Walt, thank you very much for the phone call. I will take exception to your idea that the Bears weren't willing to pay, because that had nothing to do with it. In fact, Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace are making the same amount of money as the upper half of GMs and head coaches in the NFL. They're not the highest paid. They're not anywhere near the lowest paid. And so money had nothing to do with it. I have questioned from the moment we heard the pick the wisdom of taking Mitchell Trubisky, one of my favorite pieces of trivia, the least experienced college quarterback ever drafted in the first round in the NFL. You knew it was going to take a little bit longer. But sometimes you draft prospects and projects, and that's what he has been. And it looks now, the last 4, 5, 6 weeks, like we're starting to see the best of Mitchell Trubisky. And, Arthur, I think what everybody's waiting to see is, it's happened against some questionable defenses. If it happens against good defenses, then there's no question that you can get to and win a Super Bowl with the way he's playing right now. But we just don't have a big enough sample size to know if it's real or not.
Right, it's just still too big of an if. So as Wayne laid out, this Packers defense is getting better. It's not going to be confused as elite by anyone, but it will be the biggest test to date. And And look, you can only beat the opponents that are on your schedule. So Mitch owes no one any apologies for playing well against bad opponents. I just think that you need to see it. You need to see, obviously, a little bit better test before you know it's real, before you're willing to commit to him long-term, potentially. I mean, I think that kind of sounds crazy regardless. Maybe we'll get into it in the back half of the show. I don't know how many opportunities potentially to start are going to be available outside of Chicago anyway. So that's all going to be a factor too when it's officially time to discuss the Mitch Trubisky contract. But I thought that the caller made a really good point about the inexperience and just the fact that we had hit on it already, is that everyone's learning curve is different. They've been a little bit longer than you'd like and you need here. And obviously that's compounded by the fact that the NFL is such a fluid league. Obviously, the old acronym, not for long. So you don't have time to be waiting on these guys to develop. And unfortunately, that's where the Bears have found themselves. And the clock obviously is ticking, continues to.
Yeah, I think to Walt's point about experience and inexperience, you know, there's nothing wrong with getting the best young up-and-comers. And so I have no issue with the processes that the Bears used to decide on Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy, or the fact that they hired them.
And nor do but they had went with the retread previously, obviously.
Yeah.
And John Fox.
Yeah, I mean, so. John Fox was, and it's not what Pace wanted to do, and he got talked into it, and John Fox phoned it in for 3 years. So that's not an issue. But I also think, you know, just to, you got to report both sides of the story. Ryan Pace is not inexperienced anymore. I mean, you know, at this point, he's been the GM for 6 years. I believe he was ready for the job when he got it. I believe he's done some good things that he gets no credit for. And the bad things have not been, you know, the huge disasters that people want to paint him to be. But he is forever going to be married to the Mitch Trubisky trade and pick. That one you can't get away from. And I don't think inexperience is an acceptable, not that anybody's looking for excuses, but it's not an acceptable explanation right now. They've had 4 years, or at least four seasons, to understand what they got in Mitch Trubisky, and what he has done and put around Mitch on offense hasn't been good enough. And I think that's why Ryan is getting so much heat right now. And most importantly, it's that offensive line that was so obvious to everybody 2 years ago needed to be upgraded, and so little had been done to upgrade it.
Right. And look, like you just said, it's been 4 years, so let's be careful before we are duped or make too much into the final six, seven, whatever the Bears do have left to play and can continue what to this point has been a, you know, sustainable improvement on offense. So and to his one other point, or there were a few points, but I hope that this is a way to kind of sum this up succinctly. I think that it's easier for a franchise quarterback to cover up for a lesser supporting cast than it is for a lesser supporting cast to cover up for, or even a greater supporting cast to cover up for, the lack of a true difference-making quarterback. I think that's kind of what Walt was saying with regard to the Super Bowl and what type of quarterbacks are most likely, or, you know, who you can win with and who you're most likely to win with.
Well, there's no question about that. And nobody is belittling the desire to have a franchise quarterback or the need for one. I mean, you know, you look at who's going to be playing on Championship Sunday in the two conference title games. It's a pretty good bet that in the NFC, it's going to be Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, or Drew Brees. Okay, I mean, yeah, I'm not guaranteeing it, but that's probably what's going to happen. In the AFC, you have to assume it's going to be Patrick Mahomes. It could very well be Ben Roethlisberger. You know, you don't have actually the franchise quarterbacks in the AFC that you have in the NFC right now. But at the end of the day, obviously you want one, you'd love to have one, but it's not the only way you can win, I think is the point.
And I'd throw Josh Allen into that mix, obviously still at 23 years old, trying to carve out his spot as the whatever cliche franchise quarterback. But man, I could not be more impressed with the type of third season he has had. And Hub, I couldn't be more impressed right now with the Bills organization. I think that that is one that is set up for a sustained period of success. And it's because they gambled big at quarterback and they got it right. And they've got some really sharp individuals leading that team, and Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean.
Yeah, they're doing a great job. They are going to have to find some more playmakers on defense. I still wonder about the overall level of talent, but they have unearthed a lot of great prospects. They are extremely well coached. They play great complementary football, and the Stephon Diggs trade, which seemed a bit nuts at the time, has really worked out well for both teams. Actually, the Vikings did very well in that deal as well. But I got to tell you, Arthur, you know, you mentioned Josh Allen. I don't remember the last time I saw a player at that position make that kind of leap over the course of one off season. I mean, the difference with that kid, and I did a few of his games from the sidelines last year. It's not that he was bad, but he didn't resemble the guy that we're seeing this year. And he is playing like a franchise quarterback right now. Now, obviously, he's going to have to do that over a period of time before he earns that title.
100% with you. I hadn't thought about it, so now I'm going to rack my brain and just think of other, you know, decent parallels. But it goes without saying, don't take anything away from Josh Allen, who has been tremendous. It's the reason Brian Daboll is probably the hottest head coaching candidate out there. At least I think he'd be number one on my list. I haven't really picked your brain on that, but the work he has done with Josh Allen, with that offense. Think about how they got Stephon Diggs up to speed to lead the NFL in receiving in a lost offseason. That used to be a position where it was a wash in year one if you were switching teams. Those were the red flag busts, the high-profile wide receivers and going into new offenses and looking for early success. But it has been, I know this isn't a Buffalo Bills market or show, but really, really impressed with the way they've done things. And remember, they tore it all the way down before they started building it back up.
Yeah, Brian Daboll definitely going to be one of the hot candidates out there. I think that Bob Sala, if he doesn't get the Lions job, is going to be a hot candidate in a lot of places. Matt Eberflus, the Colts have not performed quite up to what we'd expect consistently, but Eberflus still a very hot candidate. And then there's Eric Bieniemy's candidacy, which should still be at the top of the list and isn't for reasons that escape me. It's not his fault that he's got that talent to work with. He's still done an incredible job. When you talk about the lesser-known, non-retread hot coordinators, those four guys are probably the names you're going to hear the most of come Black Monday, along with Josh McDaniels, if anybody thinks they can pry him out of New England this time. And, you know, there'll be a few others. But Daboll certainly right there near the top of the list. Guys, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to switch streams a little bit. Going to talk some NHL hockey, the season just around the corner. Not a lot of good news for the Chicago Blackhawks the last couple weeks. Jay Zawoski is our in-house NHL expert right here at The Score. Jay joins us in just a moment. Welcome back, everybody. You've got 670 The Score on your radio dial. Maybe you're streaming with us at 670thescore.com. I am Hub Arkish, my co-host Arthur Arkish. We're having a great start to our New Year's, getting to visit with the best sports fans in the world here at Chicago's number one rated all sports radio station, 670 The Score. Been talking primarily football this first couple hours with one of the biggest games in a long time, not just this season coming up Sunday, Bears-Packers, but there has been major Chicago Blackhawks news over the last couple weeks as well. Specifically, or not specifically, but most notably, the news just a couple days ago that Jonathan Toews will be out indefinitely, will not be joining the team due to an undiagnosed illness. He will not be joining the team for the start of training camp or for the season opener in a couple weeks. We went to our Score NHL expert, Jay Zawoski, to try and get updated on the latest. Jay, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. And first and most importantly, hope the holidays have been great to you and yours, that everything gets off to a great start for you.
Thanks, you too. Happy New Year, Hub and Arthur. It's nice to be on with you guys. And I was hoping 2 weeks before the season began, we'd have some more optimistic things to talk about. But it's been, like you mentioned, Hub, a tough couple weeks for the Blackhawks.
Well, we're going to get to all of it, but the most notable is last year's Rookie of the Year runner-up, Kirby Dach, out 4 to 5 months, broken wrist, I believe it was, in the World Juniors. Forward Alex Nylander, out 4 to 6 months. Basically, these guys are out for the season, you know, when you look at what we're looking at right now. And then you get the news about Toews, and so I think that's where we have to start, because while these are three of the more important players on the team, there's nobody, with the obvious exception or possible exception of Patrick Kane, as important as Jonathan Toews. What, if anything, have you been able to find out about this other than the fact that that we don't know a whole lot?
Well, that's kind of the thing, is that no one really seems to know what's going on, and that's from as far as I can gather, that seems to be the truth. They're still looking for an answer as to what is exactly bothering Jonathan Toews, what is making him feel this fatigue lately, and they're working with their doctors to get an answer, which to me is, that's maybe more troubling than any sort of, you know, COVID scare or something like that. At least you would know with, you know, what you're dealing with at that point. But the way it stands right now, no one seems to know. That includes Jonathan Toews. And for a guy in his physical condition at his age, I know we all think of him as an old man, but he's 32 years old, 33 years old. I mean, in prime physical condition, when you see things like this happen to players like that, it gets a little bit scary. And I think, you know, to a guy who maybe Chicago fans would know less than Jonathan Toews would think, well, you know, he just kind of maybe let himself go in the offseason. Maybe he wasn't working out as hard as usual. Well, we know that's not the case with Jonathan Toews. That will never be the case with him. So it's a little bit scary. The unknown of it is scary. And the fact that there's no timeline is scary. And I'm not going to try to predict what this might be, but I was immediately reminded of everything that was going on with Brian Bickle before his MS diagnosis. And I think, you know, Jonathan Toews probably has things like that in the back of his head. And I'm sure, you know, for him, it's very troubling to not know what exactly is going on. And that's got to be the biggest concern at this point, is finding out what exactly they're dealing with.
Yeah, Arthur, let me just jump in for a real quick follow-up here before I hand it off to you. You know, Jay, that's the part that is so troubling, is they say, you know, chronic fatigue. Well, that's one of the first symptoms of COVID. And with everything we've gone through, you know, that'd be your natural assumption. Obviously, he has tested negative for COVID, or they would say that's what it is. That's pretty easy. And I think that is what makes this so scary. Now, you know, we can certainly hope that, you know, we hear things like this all the time that turn out to be nothing terribly serious and are treatable. And maybe there's a medication regimen or even, you know, homeopathic type stuff. But there's also the other possibility that it could be something serious. And it's the unknown that kind of has this casting a pall over everything.
Yeah. So one of the few things I was able to find out is two of my best sources confirmed this independently, that it's not believed to be anything life-threatening, which is good. So, you know, that, I don't know. I don't want to start naming possible things he could be dealing with, but from what I'm told, as of now, it's not something that's thought to be life-threatening. So I guess the worst case scenario is out the window, which is good. So now it's, how does Jonathan Toews get back to a regular, happy, healthy life? And then once he gets there, how does he get back on the ice? It's sort of the priority of things, is figuring out what's wrong, getting him fixed, and then figuring out the hockey part. And, you know, when we're looking at a timeline for that, that could be a while. You know, I think the Hawks are going to be without Jonathan Toews for a while here. So what was looking like a tough season to begin with is now looking almost hopeless, and kind of a battle for that first overall pick with their new division rival, Detroit Red Wings.
Yeah, that's that is a bleak outlook, unfortunately, Jay. And of course, we're just most concerned about the health of Jonathan Toews, and we hope he makes as speedy and full of a recovery from whatever he's dealing with as possible. But how do you even really? It's hard to really describe this type of adversity, how unexpected it is, how close to the season it is, how much Jonathan Toews means not only on but off the ice. Can you just speak to the new challenge all of a sudden that a young coach and a roster that's kind of in a rebuilding phase has to try and weather something like this? It seems it speaks to this bleak outlook that you're saying could potentially be lying ahead.
Yeah, I think when we're looking at the hockey impact of all these news stories, the Nylander injury, the Doc injury, the Toews injury, to me, the most upsetting one is the Kirby Doc injury, because yes, they're better off with Jonathan Toews. There's no doubt about that. But we know what we have in Jonathan Toews, right? That's already been proven. We know he's a star player. He's going to the Hall of Fame, all those things. This whole season was supposed to be Kirby Doc's coming out party, where he was going to hit the ground running, having played in the World Junior Championships, having gone through a training camp with Team Canada. He was going to have a month lead on a lot of guys in the league. And, you know, from coming from where he finished last season, in the playoffs against Edmonton and Vegas, where he was arguably the best Blackhawk on the ice at age 19. Everything seemed really lined up for this to be Kirby Doc's big breakthrough year, and everything sort of filled in behind that. There's still a lot of exciting young prospects the Blackhawks have, like Adam Boqvist and Ian Mitchell, but this was supposed to be Doc's year, and a lot of this season's, I guess you'd say, fun or expectation was sort of predicated on how he was going to look, how he was going to perform. Now without him, you say, okay, well, you know, if you were trying to do the what-if game and say, okay, well, if Doc has a great year, and if Taves and Kane don't have a drop-off, and if, you know, Alex DeBrincat bounces back offensively, and if, all those things included Kirby Doc, but now you get rid of him, you get rid of Taves, and there's really no chance here for any playoffs. So what the Hawks can do is use this opportunity to develop and to play some younger players who maybe they weren't ready to play just yet. And I think, you know, maybe for Jeremy Colleton, this creates an opportunity for him to be a little more creative, not worry so much about the standings, not worry so much about the wins and losses, because at this point there are zero expectations for the season. So get your system into how whatever system you feel you need to play, get it going, get these young players playing, and give some guys some opportunities that maybe you weren't expecting. What I don't want to see is a bunch of veteran guys filling out these spots. It just doesn't accomplish anything. All it does is make you slightly more competitive and reduce your chances of getting, you know, a better draft pick. And I'm not saying tank, but you've got good young prospects who are close to NHL ready. Just call them up, let them play, and see what happens. That's what I would do with this year.
Well, you know, Jay, it certainly is frustrating and disappointing. And I am curious, even prior to all of this horrible injury and illness news, you know, we've been so used the last couple of years to focusing all our concern on the blue liners and the Hawks defense. And yet, you know, you're now without your future Hall of Fame center, number one. You're without your number two center in Doc. You lose Nylander. You wonder how they're going to score goals. And yet you turn it around, and I don't know what the answer is in the net. I mean, I was kind of taken aback when they decided there were no terms under which they wanted to bring Corey Crawford back. And I'm wondering, what are their plans going forward at goalie?
It's going to be let these three guys, Lankin and Delia and Subban, battle it out for the job and see who reigns supreme. And, you know, before all these injuries hit, I was envisioning a season where the Hawks would lose a lot of games, you know, 6-4, 7-5, where they're just going to be huge scoring fest because, like you said, the defense isn't great, but they did have, with Doc and Taves healthy, their offense is actually pretty solid. Andrew Shaw's going to be back. You know, you expect DeBrincat to bounce back. There's a prospect they signed from Europe, Pia Suter, who's expected to come in and be a contributor right away. So the offense wasn't the issue before these injuries, but you would look back and say, okay, well, what about the goalies, though? And that, to me, is that was sort of the first indication that they were willing to lose, because you look at last season and they had two all-star caliber goalies for the majority of the season. Then they played Corey Crawford for the final stretch in the entire playoffs, and he was really, really good after Robin Leonard got traded. So you had an all-star goalie in that almost every night, and without a pandemic, they're not even close to a playoff team. So how are they going to be expect to be any better with three guys who are completely unproven? And that was sort of the first indication of, okay, they're ready to sort of take this next step and play some young guys. But Dylan Strome, who's 23, who has proven to be one of your more effective players, you know, probably not your number one center for the future, but a guy who you can pencil in number two, number three, is still unsigned, you know, 13 days before the, 12 days now before the season begins. And then Stan Bowman's first big free agent signing was 35-year-old centerman Carl Soderberg, who is now your number one centerman without Taves and without Doc. And it's not that I'm against Carl Soderberg, but it's another old guy you brought in. I don't know. I just, you know, you remember years ago the Bulls talked about going younger and more athletic, right? That was something that Gar Forman and John Paxson said, and that haunted them because the moves they made did not reflect that policy. You know, I know injuries change things, but it remains to be seen whether or I guess how willing Stan Bowman and Jeremy Colleton are to actually go young and to actually rebuild and to actually give these young players some chances. Now they've got no excuses. They've got a bunch of roster spots open for guys, and I hope they use those spots for young players.
Hey, Jay, you mentioned Dylan Strome, the clock ticking on the 23-year-old RFA. Still unsigned, as you mentioned. Do you think that the news of the past week has maybe – has it changed the Blackhawks' view of Strome and whether he's more valuable to them in a new, with a new contract, or potentially being flipped to another squad, and what that might return if that's that's the route they would go?
I mean, logically, yes, that makes a lot of sense, because – you signed Dylan Strome, and he's your number one center. I mean, there's no question about it. He would be the best center on the team right now. And Stan Bowman said it this week on the Blackhawks Talk podcast that, you know, as soon as we and the agent begin to value Dylan equally, we'll get a deal done. Okay, that doesn't sound like Stan Bowman's in a big hurry to get things done. Those aren't the sort of make nice statements you make when you're trying to make something happen. It seems like they've got a number set with Dylan Strome, and part of the risk you take by extending this thing now less than 2 weeks before the season begins is, well, you know what, when injuries happen, the player gets more leverage. Instead of just getting this done early and sort of meeting in the middle and getting it done, now this is dragged out, and now the agent knows that they've got more leverage than they had before, and the Hawks are going to need Dylan Strome. They need Dylan Strome. And why would you not? I don't, you know, I know fans are down on him a little bit after last season. He had a down year, he was injured. Did not have a good playoff, that's true. But he's 23 years old. He's a first-round pick. He has shown way more good hockey than bad. And if you're talking about building your next core of young players, which is what Stan Bowman spent the entire fall doing when he was going out with every podcast on Earth, including mine, a 23-year-old proven center seems to fit that mold, doesn't it? So the fact that this hasn't been able to get done is a little bit baffling to me. And I still think it's going to get done, but I've been saying that now for, what, 5 months or whatever it's been, and it's still not done. So it's a little bit concerning. One thing you know about Stan Bowman is he's unemotional. He's not going to show his hand one way or another. I don't think he's going to change or panic one way or another. And he probably realizes, too, like, look, Dylan Strome is not going to be the difference between us making or missing the playoffs, so the longer I wait, maybe Dylan Strome and his agent start to panic a little bit and a deal gets done, because they have his rights. They have the ability, you know, he's a restricted free agent. He can't just go find work somewhere else. The Hawks have his rights. So he really can't go anywhere unless they traded him. So I do think it gets done. It's just, it's an unfortunate place to be right now with Strome and with the entire team.
Here's the latest from the Exergen Weather Center. It is 32 degrees in downtown Chicago. The snow is here, just flurries on and off so far, but we are going to have precipitation for the better part of this New Year's Day. This segment is sponsored by Benjamin Moore. Spending more time at home? Transform your space with a painting project. Choose color from your couch with Color Portfolio app by Benjamin Moore. Access thousands of colors to visualize in any space. Available on the App Store for Android and iPhones. Jay, we're going to let you bounce and go enjoy the holiday, but I've got one more question for you before we do. We're hearing all of this, obviously injuries and illness, not his fault, and yet it appears that during this offseason, Stan Bowman has somehow emerged from a bit of a potential power struggle in more control than ever, and with all the uncertainty that we're talking about, you wonder where this confidence from the Wirtz family is coming from and you know, what his plan is long range.
Yeah, Stan Bowman comes out of several unsuccessful seasons in a row with a promotion. And, you know, I think I sort of realized that quickly, that was sort of the way things were headed after John McDonough was fired and then Stan Bowman was making the rounds all fall. It seemed to indicate that he was not going anywhere. Look, I think he's always sort of had the mystery of John McDonough's involvement. It's really unclear to this day how involved he was, how influential he was. Depending on who you talk to, everyone seems to have a different sort of take on it. There's people who have said he was hugely involved. Others say it was more in a periphery way. But we know one way or another he had influence. I know almost certainly that he was big in the call-up of Adam Boqvist. He thought the Hawks needed to call somebody up to excite the fan base, et cetera. And John McDonough wanted that done sooner than Stan Bowman did. Now, with this promotion, with this, you know, president of hockey operations, the spotlight is solely on Stan Bowman. And yes, maybe it buys him a few more years, which I'm not totally in love with, but it gets everything that goes wrong will now be directed at him. He'll have no more excuses built in. I've said this before. If hockey operations fail, the president of hockey operations has to be fired, right? That's sort of the – if the hockey part's not working, the guy in charge of hockey has to go. So what Stan Bowman has done here in getting this promotion has also put a big spotlight on him in terms of getting this thing turned around. And now, with everything that's happening here, he almost gets himself another year bought because, well, you know, this is supposed to be Kirby Doc's year and we don't have Taves, so how can I really be judged on this season? And he's right. So it delays things another year. You know, it's just a little frustrating. What I was hoping the Hawks would have done would just bring in, you know, someone to just oversee the entire operation and start fresh. I'm one of the few people that still thinks Dan Bowman did a pretty fine job overall here, but the time's coming to make a change, and it's not going to be for a while here. So we'll see what the next few seasons bring. But right now, Stan Bowman has no more guard. There's no more shield against him. It's all him now. The entire hockey blame will fall on him, and I think it's probably overdue.
Jay, really appreciate the time this morning. We hope that today will be an enjoyable holiday for you. We hope for you, all of our listeners, everybody out there, obviously the 21 is a much better year than 20. It would be hard not to be. Enjoy this holiday. We'll be talking again real soon.
Okay. Thanks, Hub. Thanks, Arthur.
That is Jay Zawoski. He is our NHL expert here at 670 The Score. We wish we had better news about the Blackhawks right now, but it's been a tough couple weeks. We will stay on top of those stories as they continue to develop. We're going to take a quick commercial break here. When we return, our phone number 312-644-6767. You want to talk some Blackhawks? You want to talk Bears, Packers, NFL? You want to talk about the Cubs, the big trade with Yu Darvish, whatever it may be? We've got it all for you. Bruce Levine going to join us in the 12 o'clock hour, as well as Bill Huber from SI.com, who covers the Green Bay Packers. Give us a call right now, though, 312-644-6767. We're back to talk with you in just a moment.
Does that mean you'll be more aggressive this time, or will you change things up, or what will be different without giving away a game plan?
There's the most important part of that question right there, without giving away the game plan. I just said we're emptying the chamber. That's enough, isn't it? It just depends what size, weapon we're talking about, you know. Does it hold six? Is it like my wife's snub-nosed little 38 I got her just so she feels good during these, you know, she's home alone? Or I think there's only six in that chamber, so that may not be enough.
We'll just say you have something up your sleeve.
Huh?
We'll just say you have something up your sleeve.
It's going to be, it'll be, we're going to, we got to prepare. It's Thursday. We got a huge day ahead of us coming up. Got a great walkthrough coming up, and then a very, very important practice, and then one Friday and a walkthrough on Saturday. And, you know, so if we do the right thing, we prepare the way we've been preparing, our guys will go out and they're going to play hard. They'll play fast.
Chicago Bears defensive coordinator Chuck Pagano and our buddy Potsy going back and forth a little bit on the Zoom yesterday. Coach Pagano talking about trying to prepare for the Packers and giving it everything they have. Mark Potash, of course, covers the Bears for the Chicago Sun-Times and visited with us in the 9 o'clock hour. There's no question that the focus is on the Bears defense right now, and specifically their pass rush as they get ready to take on the Packers and Aaron Rodgers. That really is, in many respects, the key to this football game for them. And Arthur, I you know, you look at it and I can't escape the feeling. We make predictions and we know what they're worth. Everybody gives their best guess. I know that the Bears are more than capable of playing with these guys. They're more than capable of beating them. They haven't done it a lot recently, but we can say with some certainty one thing. A lot of it comes down to Khalil Mack. He took over a couple games with them recently and was the reason that they were competitive, even, you know, were able to beat them that second time in 2018. He is a Pro Bowler again. It's not like he's had a bad season, but he has not been able to dominate at times the way we have become used to seeing him dominate. And if Khalil Mack shows up as the, you know, NFL defensive MVP that he has been and can be on Sunday, then you got to like the Bears' chances of doing some damage against Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, yeah, it would certainly improve their chances, no doubt about it. As I had mentioned to Patsy, I still think it's going to be just crucial that they have a 1B, obviously, because the Packers are still going to be putting a holy level of attention on Mac. And, you know, it's an old cliche, but a lot of coaches say, you know, we're going to make someone other than your best player beat us. So I think that's going to hold true here. You had mentioned earlier in the program, Hub, that there's no doubt in your mind Khalil Mack's playing hurt. That's not a revelation. He's been on the injury report, of course. What about Robert Quinn? Are we worried that maybe he's closer to being washed than hurt, or do you think that something's been going on this year? Because that's been one of the bigger disappointments, obviously, in terms of return on investment.
No, I definitely think that he's playing limited, if not hurt. I think it's that ankle that flared up right at the beginning of the season. One of the great advantages I have beyond getting to watch a lot of tape is that I get to do our Bet River Sportsbook pregame show and our Prop Swap postgame show every week with Patrick Manley and Olin Krutz. And when you talk to those guys who are students of the game and offensive linemen who are students of pass rushers, they will point out that his speed rush is there, but his power rush has not been. He has not been able to bull rush anybody. And the suspicion is it's because he can't anchor on that right leg and push off and get the power that he needs. Now, that said, when you study this tape, he's been pretty good the last couple of weeks. He's been very active. He's been very disruptive. He's been close a bunch of times. He has helped set up a couple of Bilal Nichols sacks. Nichols cleaned up, and he was the reason for it. And when we talk about the significance of the David Bakhtiari injury, it is Robert Quinn in that strong outside linebacker spot, that right edge spot, who is going to be the beneficiary of whoever the backup to David Bakhtiari is. And that's the issue the Packers face, is that they may have to help whoever that is with Robert Quinn, and then how do they help with Khalil Mack and with Akeem Hicks? So nobody's pretending after seeing the last game, which wasn't close, that one injury is going to be the difference and suddenly the Bears are the favorites. You know, it's the NFL. It's next man up. The Packers are going to have people out there. They're going to get in the way. They're going to be able to block some of this. But you cannot understate the significance of this injury to Bakhtiari coming 3 days before kickoff.
Right. Yeah, no question. It is interesting, too. We mentioned to Wayne how, you know, one thing that Rodgers has had the benefit of throughout this entire season is just outstanding blocking and consistent blocking. So how much that changes and how he adjusts if needed will certainly be fascinating. Look, Hub, I feel like I have been dumping on the Bears too much. I feel like I want to say something positive. So here we go. Another guy that I think could loom large Sunday, especially because of the matchup, if we assume Jair Alexander is going to spend most of the day on Allen Robinson. Darnell Mooney is a ball player. Ryan Pace found something in the fifth round. Obviously, he just set the franchise rookie receiving record. However few great rookie receivers have come through the Bears, that's nothing on Darnell Mooney. He's been really good. I just haven't had a chance to talk about him with you. How have you enjoyed watching his development, and what do you think the ceiling is for that kid? He's obviously a little bit undersized, but he's played way over his head as a fifth rounder coming out of Tulane.
I'll tell you what's so impressive to me about Darnell Mooney is he was drafted almost exclusively for his 4.37 40 time. I mean, that was what they were looking for. Take the top off, a speed guy, a speed complement to Allen Robinson. We haven't seen a lot of his speed. What we have seen is an unusually, solid route runner for a rookie. And his yards after catch are so impressive that the first guy doesn't bring him down. Normally when you've got young receivers, cornerback might give him a little room because they know they'll give him the 7-8 yards and take him down. He breaks almost every first tackle. He does it with moves. He doesn't do it with power. But this is a very impressive young man. And Arthur, I would add to it, I still believe that Anthony Miller is a very dangerous weapon when used effectively. And I think one of the issues that they were having with Nick Foles is that he was getting stuck on Darnell Mooney. He was getting stuck at times on Allen Robinson. Mitch has actually spread it around a little bit better. And when they find ways, if somebody wants to take away Allen Robinson, if they can threaten the Packers with both Mooney and Miller, the Packers secondary isn't that special. Jair Alexander, I think, is a little overrated, to be honest with you. He's a very good football player. He certainly did not deserve a Pro Bowl nod over Kyle Fuller, but that's the way these things go. You know, when you're on an 11, 12, 13 win team, that's what happens. And so there's no doubt in my mind that the Bears can challenge this Packers secondary a little bit if Mitch gets time, and if they're on schedule, and if they're doing what they want to do on the nakeds and the boots and the play action, I think that the Bears receivers could have a big day Sunday.
Hub, you know that no one wants to love Anthony Miller more than me. I was so excited about his NFL prospects coming out. I thought they gave up a ton to get him, obviously, but some really impressive early signs, of course, with all the touchdowns as a rookie and the late surge in year two. I'm not writing him off by any means, but I guess in a game of this magnitude, he has not shown that he's a player that you want to have to depend on, which is why I kind of skip over him and go to Mooney, just as the Bears have, quite frankly. Darnell Mooney is very clearly the Bears' number two receiver now. But yes, Miller can be a playmaker, no doubt, and they'll need him Sunday. I don't think we can overstate this point. You may say Alexander's a little overrated. Maybe he is, but he's going to make those secondary and tertiary options all the more important. They're going to get to go against Shandon Sullivan and Kevin King, unlike Allen Robinson versus Jair. So I'm curious to see how those two guys perform in this game. And then obviously, first and foremost, I think, is how many touches can you get the red-hot David Montgomery, and how good do you feel about this O-line heading into this one with a dangerous, if not consistently great, Packers front? Sam Mustipher versus Kenny Clark is a good place to start up front if you're watching for those battles.
Yeah, and I would caution Bears fans up front. Chuck Pagano made an excellent point when we were talking to him on Thursday. The Green Bay Packers, and this is just the numbers, play more dime defense than any team in the league and have more defensive backs on the field than any team in the league on a regular basis. Last Sunday night, the way that they beat the Titans was they got away from their dime defense and they loaded up with linebackers. And my guess would be that they will do some of that with David Montgomery as well, because he has been as big a threat in recent weeks as Derrick Henry. And so it may limit, you know, some of what Montgomery gives you, but it just opens things up that much more for these receivers. The other reason, Arthur, that this conversation is so relevant is Allen Robinson is a free agent. I think it's inexcusable that it's gotten to this. It never should have happened. An extension should have been done last summer. It should have been done early in the season. He may very well be back. We don't know. We know the Bears have salary cap issues, but they've backed themselves into a corner with this one. And if somebody else wants to pay Allen Robinson what he is worth, which is number one wide receiver money, you could be looking at the start of next year with your one and two being Darnell Mooney and Anthony Miller. And that wouldn't excite anybody, I understand. I see you shaking your head. I'm not saying it's a good thing, but I'm saying that's the reality, you know, and that's why they have to continue to find out, you know, how much closer to his ceiling they can get Anthony Miller. We need to take a very quick commercial break here, but when we get back, we've got more Bears talk for you. We're going to be breaking down the Bears-Packers 6 ways to Sunday. Bill Huber covers the Packers for SI.com. He will be here at 12:40. At 12:20, Bruce Levine is going to check in with us. We're going to talk about the Darvish trade and all things baseball in Chicago. But for the next 25 minutes or so, it's your phone calls at 312-644-6767. We're talking NFL Sunday. All 32 teams playing Sunday. Last game of the regular season. You have 7 playoff spots still unsettled and 11 teams fighting for them. We're breaking it all down for you right here on The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever,
or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.